The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. A tricky Champions League week for the English sides as both finalists fail to win. Liverpool lose in Naples and Spurs limp to a 2-0 lead and then limp to a 2-2 draw in Greece. A five-man debate on who should take a penalty cost Chelsea a point. City's crisis is over. Real Madrid's isn't after a 3-0 humbling at Minnow's PSG. And Dortmund miss a great chance to beat Barca. We'll round up all the matches from game week one, round up the Football League as well, answer your questions. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, Philippe Auclair. Bonjour, ça va?
Ça va bien, et toi, Maxime?
Ça va bien. Faye Carruthers. Holy Carruthers, it's Faye Carruthers.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
How are the opera glasses? I see you've already taken the opera glasses on, haven't you? Barry gave you some hey, Baz.
I've had a bit of a disaster, actually.
Oh, you've lost them?
No, I haven't lost the opera glasses. Okay. Don't worry, Barry. Mm-hmm. But I have lost my original Toy Story binos. I think I left them at Millwall.
Okay.
And so I have bought, because much as I love the thought of the opera glasses, mm-hmm. they're absolutely bloody useless for seeing anything. So okay. I've had to buy some actual teeny tiny binos. They arrived today.
Probably, they're probably really bad to be able to see things for a reason, because opera, let's face it.
You don't really need to see opera though, do you?
Pretty boring. Is that sacrilege?
It's absolutely sacrilegious.
Where should...
You can still get them from your seat. I think it's at the,
if I was to,
for a quid.
If I was to start...
For a quid? Well, no. Barry stole mine. Mm.
No, well, a friend of mine stole them.
A friend of a friend.
If I was going to start opera, where should I start? Nessun Dorma, Puccini, is that it?
Puccini is not too bad. Okay. Depends. Are you into some spectacular... do you like spectacular things?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I think Tony Yeboah of opera. That's what I want.
I was going to say that one is Cunning Little Vixen by Janáček is one of the most beautiful operas you can both listen and watch.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. We'll go. Thanks so much to Dave, who got in touch to say, just want to give compliments to whoever put the competitions in order of seniority in The Guardian this morning. Just above the Champions League results was the Tunnocks Caramel Wafer Challenge Cup, Ballymena United 0, Rangers under-21s 1. So we should start with that game. This is the most important. Good win there, Barry, for Rangers under-21s.
It was indeed. They've taken this competition very seriously, and you've got to feel for Ballymena, I think.
Yeah.
They've, it is a hard place to go, famously, but Rangers under-21s have negotiated the hurdle.
And I suppose...
Are we really starting with this?
Napoli 2, Liverpool 0. Barry, are you in a bit of a grump? Because before we recorded, you were a bit grumpy, and that's your first on-air bit of grumpiness.
Yeah, I'm the one in a grump. Yeah. I arrived into the studio. Philippe was ranting about something or other. You were ranting about something or other.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and got accused of being in a grump before I'd even opened my mouth.
I greeted you with a smile when you came down to get me in reception.
And did you get a smile back?
I did.
Okay.
Well, I was in reception.
So it's just you
Barry
two.
Didn't even see me.
You were wearing sunglasses.
You were in disguise,
so
Philippe.
Right, let's get on with it. You can tell producer Jonathan is off today. Napoli 2, Liverpool 0. I guess, Philippe, the penalty is the big talking point, dive or no dive. VAR or not getting involved. Matt, an Everton fan, says, it's probably been covered a few times. I still don't get it. The clear and obvious error thing. Surely if a penalty is given that isn't a penalty... Is that not an error? I'm totally confused by the whole thing and it seems utterly pointless.
The error is not the objective error, as in was it a penalty, was it not a penalty, but is when the referee took this decision, did the referee make a clear and obvious error making that decision? In this particular case, it's not clear and obvious. He genuinely believed there was a penalty. There is grounds for saying, well, maybe yes, he could be, maybe he was right. So therefore, the referee is on the pitch, has the authority and keeps his authority, and therefore there is no change.
Okay. Well, I'm happy with that.
How can you be happy with that? It's ridiculous.
What's ridiculous?
The fact that an incorrect decision wasn't overturned with the benefit of a video assistant refereeing team. The whole idea of having video assistant referees is to overturn incorrect decisions so that we don't have to bore ourselves to tears talking about incorrect decisions all the time.
But
can we go back to talking about Ballymena against Rangers under 21?
That's why I was moving on. I was saying, okay, well, you know, I kind of agree with Matt. I sort of think, you know, if you've got it, you might as well use it. But if they're not going to overturn things, it's okay. We'll all be okay. There'll be football.
But if they're not going to overturn things, why is it there?
That's a very good point. That it is. I know it's there for really bad mistakes. I know that is the whole point of it. Mm-hmm. But when that is a pretty blatant mistake, it does make you think, what's the point in having it in the first place? Because how many of those really bad mistakes will you get across a season?
I mean, I don't disagree with that either. I don't know what you want me to do about it. I can't do anything.
Same here. I was only saying what I've been told by you know, referees and IFAB and people like that, to try and explain that, yes, sometimes it's a bit difficult to comprehend. Yeah.
I mean, the benchmark is, it apparently wasn't clear and obvious enough of an error. So where is the line drawn? At what point
does an error become clear and obvious?
Subjective, which is what also when you talk to referees and even people who are lawmakers, they say, well, there's always a part of subjectivity in
and
it.
So there should be. It's football. It's supposed to be enjoyable. We're supposed to be able to debate it and have conversations like this. So, you know, human error is part of it. And I'm bored of talking about
it. I think so.
Okay, well, let's talk about the game then. Do you think, I mean, this game clearly could have gone either way. That penalty was late on, and then a Van Dijk mistake meant that Fernando Llorente, as some people said, got retribution for the Champions League final, which I think is
He showed them.
Which is perhaps a stretch, isn't it? Do you think Liverpool underestimated Napoli, or just they just weren't quite at it?
I don't think so. I think it's quite a funny game insofar as it was very evenly matched for 70 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then Liverpool started to dominate. I think they were physically fitter than Napoli, and that became quite obvious. There were Napoli players dropping all over the place, you know, suffering from cramp. But during this period of Liverpool dominance, Napoli scored the two goals that won the game. Now, I think if Liverpool hadn't been chasing it after going a goal down because of that dubious penalty, they probably wouldn't have conceded the second one. But I would say Napoli were worth the win. Liverpool, their front three didn't really click. I said on Monday they're, you know, practically impossible to defend against. Napoli did a pretty good job defending against them. But the Napoli keeper had to make a couple of good saves. Adrian made a brilliant save for Liverpool. It was an enjoyable game, even though, you know, it was a nil-niller up until the 82nd minute.
I mean, you mentioned that save from Adrian. Mm. That is a piece of goalkeeping brilliance, isn't it? It's like the sort of the strength to keep your hand up in the air for that long. I don't know if strength is the right word, because he's already going down.
And he's reacting as he's going down, throwing his hand in the opposite direction at a ball which is hit with some pace, some strength. So, yes.
That's what he's capable of, though, and that's what's brilliant about Adrian. But he's also capable of making really stupid errors, which is why he just doesn't get spoken about as one of the absolute greats.
It's why he'll never get a chance at a really big club.
It's quite interesting, actually, because I know he's made one high-profile error, but in recent games, people have kind of forgotten that Alisson isn't there. There's correct, been no comment about Adrian being between the sticks, and which suggests he's doing very well, and he certainly did well in that game.
Perhaps also Liverpool were surprised by the intensity that Napoli put in pressing, in particular quite high up the pitch, and, you know, cutting this abnormal channels of transmission. And also, I mean, Koulibaly had an absolutely astonishing game. In contrast of some of his performance at Champions League last year, where he was not always at the top, now you could see why people are talking about him as one of the world's greatest defenders.
Yeah, he was outstanding.
Here's a question from Gokul Faye. Do you think that Mane and Salah's 2-on-1 chance during this game would have produced a goal if Mane hadn't thrown tantrums the other day and hence overthought in that instance? He should have just scored on his own. I mean, that was the moment, wasn't it? It was a really overhit pass. I don't know. I don't think that pass was as simple as people are saying it was, because you're running at pace and you've got to...
He slightly loses his balance as well as he's shaping to make it.
I also think they play so fast. There's not that... It's instinctive, isn't it? It's not a, I don't like him, I don't want to pass to him kind of thing, which is what everybody's intimating, is that they've got some kind of beef going at the moment about who's being selfish and who's not, and who's getting the plaudits and who's not. And whether or not that's the case, I just don't think in that split second that that goes through your head in a Champions League match?
Well, I think it was the exact opposite that was going through his head, in that, oh, I've got to have to pass this to him, because if I don't, people will think we've got beef going on, when in fact we don't. And it would have been easier probably for him to score himself. But, you know, it's the first round of the group, it doesn't matter whether you lose or not.
Well, look,
it really does not matter.
Exactly the same. They had a bad start in the Champions League last season. They went on to win it.
So. And actually, they played better in that game than they played in the first game in the Champions League last year.
So, I mean, the virtue of that question, I think we all agree, you can get through the group without winning straight away. Is that and Wilson wrote about this, didn't he, Jonathan Wilson? I only call him Wilson for his detective work.
He's not a ball.
Tennis racket.
Yeah, exactly. is that there is a problem with the group stages, I guess, you know, and it's highlighted by the fact that the importance isn't quite there, that you can mess up for quite a lot of it and still get to the final, as Liverpool and Spurs proved.
Wilson wrote this article on Sunday, and the response to it was predictably ridiculous, with people making the point, you know, basically Wilson said, you've got 32 teams in the group stages, pretty much can tell which 16 are going to go through. It's going to be the 16 wealthiest clubs. There's invariably one or two exceptions. And people went, oh, yes, but... And his point being that it renders the group stages, in which there are 96 games, to whittle it down from 32 to 16, largely pointless and boring. And people went, oh, well, you can't say it's boring because Liverpool and Tottenham almost didn't get through last season. But they did get through. You know, that was the argument he was making. The big teams almost always get through. I think one of the 16 wealthiest clubs in the competition last season didn't go through. And it's... I find it extremely tedious. But the thing is, people big up the group stages of the competition, they don't watch them. You know, look at BT's viewing figures. They're awful.
It needs to be on terrestrial, because I have to say, since it went, and this is no disrespect, because I actually think that BT's coverage is excellent, but it's not. I don't have BT Sport at home. I can only watch it on my phone through my phone contract. And my phone is not that big, so it's quite difficult to sit there and really enjoy it. And for me, I used to always watch Champions League group stages at home on a Tuesday and Wednesday night, you know, appointment to view, if you like. And now it doesn't even feature. I watch and I catch up on the highlights because of my job, as opposed to I'm sitting there getting excited about a Champions League night.
So pointless and boring, yet our forensic analysis of the games from game week one will carry on to be tremendously exciting.
Well, I mean, the games are on. I do have BT Sport at home, and their coverage of football is fine. There's not a thing wrong with it, but I rarely watch it. I have to watch these group games for work reasons. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't bother, to be honest.
Oh, dear.
Also in group... I don't know. I find myself... I was watching Real Madrid PSG yesterday, and I was entertained by it. I wasn't salivating all day waiting for it, but,
it was an intriguing game, but it was the exception. I think the Borussia Dortmund-Barcelona game as well was quite spectacular.
And
Atleti-Juve,
I mean, we'll get to it as well. A good game, right?
But, you know, it's a bit like you bring, you know, a saucepan of water to the boil. It boils, that's really exciting. Then you switch the gas off and it's flat and it's going to be cold very soon again. And it's like, yeah, okay, oh, that was a great game. Will it have any incidents on what's going to happen? No, not really, actually.
Well,
because we know that Borussia Dortmund and Barcelona are going to go through.
But equally, it's the first group games, which, you know, there's no jeopardy yet.
So there is jeopardy in the Premier League, right? You know,
but it's very interesting. Those games are very interesting, perhaps to get a clearer idea of what certain clubs, at what stage of their development in the season they are, which is one of the reasons why the PSG-Real game was fascinating to watch, perhaps more than any other, because it really gave us very strong indications as to what was right and what was wrong in both clubs.
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. And you could say the same for Spurs in Greece, which is what we'll go to next. Also in Liverpool's group, RB Salzburg beat Genk 6-2. Salzburg making their Champions League debut. Erling Braut Haaland, son of Alfinger Haaland, scored in the second minute, got his hat-trick on the stroke of half-time. 17 goals for his club in just 9 games so far this season. Third youngest player to score a Champions League hat-trick after Raul and Wayne Rooney. And no doubt Lars will do a good half hour on him.
Did you see his post-game interview?
I was just going to say that, Philippe. Oh, my. He's gone down in my estimation from that. Go on, you explain it if you've not seen it.
Well, he basically did an interview in which he said absolutely nothing. It's like monosyllabic responses.
It was. But didn't he have a cheeky glint in his eye? Because you could see that the press officer was stood behind the camera and he was just kind of like, he was... petulant is the word that I would use. So the questions were being asked. They weren't closed questions. A couple of them were, but they weren't particularly closed questions. They invite a bigger response than he gave. And he was like, yes, I suppose so. Yes, I wanted this.
It was very embarrassing.
Oh, it was really embarrassing for the interviewee. And we've all been in that position where somebody doesn't want to give a post-match interview, but, you know, he'd got a hat trick. Like, come on, this is ridiculous. He was just not excited. He was quite, as I say, the best word for it is petulant. He is a teenager. And then you could see, after 4 of these questions, he looked over towards behind the camera towards the press officer, who clearly gave him a... you know, come on, we need a little bit more. So his last question, he elaborated a little bit, but he was almost just sitting there like Kevin the Teenager rolling his eyes.
Oh, hey, you.
It'd be funny if he just sort of wandered in with his arms.
It's almost as if he'd been given a dare in the dressing room by his teammates saying, when you're going to talk to the television, you should just answer with one single word and see what where it leads you to.
Maybe it's just disrespectful.
Well, but maybe after like a goalless draw, he'll be really erudite and excited. Mm. Anyway, Olympiacos 2, Spurs 2. Second game in 3 that Spurs have drawn 2-2 from being 2-0 up. The other one at the Emirates. They've won away from home just twice since January. Those wins at Dortmund and Ajax in the knockout stages last season. Pochettino saying, very disappointed. We didn't respect the plan. We're talking about focus, concentration, anticipation. How many times did we anticipate the action? It was a flat performance, Spaz, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've been critical of the group. I quite enjoyed this game on its merits, as a game of football. But again, Spurs drew... doesn't really matter. Draw away from home in Athens in a hostile atmosphere is a good result for them. But yeah, the performance was flat. A lot of the players looked off. Maurizio Pochettino was clearly very annoyed with them. And there's something not quite right about Tottenham this season. I think it's quite obvious. I've said from... before the start of the season, I think Maurizio Pochettino won't be there by the end of it. I think he'll leave. I think he may well end up at Real Madrid sooner rather than later, because I suspect there may be a vacancy opening up there sooner rather than later. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. But something is not right at Tottenham.
I was really struck. I was at the Palace game last Saturday, and at the press conference, which was quite short, I was very surprised that almost half of it was devoted by Pochettino, and really off his own bat, to rotation. And he explained he was going to rotate against Olympiacos. I'm thinking, this is a weird thing. I mean, what's the most important game at the moment? Is it winning against Palace or actually getting 3 points in the Champions League? And it seemed to me almost like he was... perhaps downplaying the importance of that game in Athens. And if he was doing it with us, he must surely have done it with his players as well. And maybe they didn't feel that it was such an important game after all. When you explain, oh yeah, we're going to rotate the team for the trip to Athens, what does it mean? You're going to have a weaker team because Spurs do not have such a deep squad?
Well,
I don't know.
Well,
and it seemed that the attitude was not right. I mean, there were a few individual performances which were simply not good enough in that
part. Yeah, Eriksen had a bad game.
He had a terrible game.
Dele Alli, it was Dele Alli's first start. So you know, we were on the Football Weekly WhatsApp group, rotating WhatsApp group. We're talking about Dele Alli and sort of how he has fallen down various pecking orders or various lists.
I didn't see this. Is this the Rotating Football Weekly WhatsApp group that I'm excluded from?
I think you're on it. There was an extensive
I'm
chat.
Assuming there's a second one that I'm not on.
I think so. Anyway, damn it. Busted. It's there's one for people who wash their hair and there's one for people who don't. It's an interesting case because he seems such a great footballer, and he is a sort of touch player who comes in and out of games. He's not a player, never has been, I don't think, to dominate football matches. No. And it was his first start, so I think you've got to give him a bit of a break there. But even still,
he's a player. You know, there are loads of questions. People still not to show what is his best position, the best system to play him in, and so on and so forth. But regardless of these interrogations, he was somebody who was contributing a great number of goals per season, great number of assists and so forth, and had a genuine impact. And it's been a while since we've seen him really have an important impact on. And I'm wondering if he's going to become Tottenham's Theo Walcott. Okay, they're very different profiles and personalities, by the way, as well. But players who hit the ceiling very, very quickly, who promise an awful, awful lot. But you cannot live your whole life on the video clip of a superb goal against Crystal Palace on the stats of two seasons ago at the kind of age.
But that happens in England, though. We always put an emphasis on youth like that, and we put so much pressure on them and push them forward so much that, you know, we actually almost forget the stalwarts of the game that have had longevity and been almost like at an even keel their entire career. We go peak, wow, they're amazing, drop off a little bit, and, you know, that there has been, which is a bit ridiculous.
It is, but it's kind of, I mean, it's sort of obvious. You know, if somebody is 19 and scores a great goal, you know, you're going to talk about a 19-year-old scoring a great goal. You're going to say, wow, this is exciting. This person could be great. You're not going to say.
And also, he became a very important player in Pochettino's team, and he was absolutely crucial to the success they've had. He was scoring goals, he was assisting, he was having a genuine impact on games. And this impact has decreased. So it might be temporary, that's all I hope, because he's had quite a few injuries as well. Probably, you know, if you're injured at the wrong time, my goodness, it can have a huge impact. And he's still very young. But you must start to, well, I would say to fear, but to worry that the player we thought he would become is perhaps not what he will become. And perhaps we were seeing him a little bit, you know, to a higher level.
Going back to...
Which is our fault, by the way, not his.
Definitely. Going back to Spurs and their performance, and is it too simplistic to think that perhaps Pochettino has seen this season as an opportunity after all the problems with the stadium last season? They've got a bit of consistency to maybe... They already made the final of the Champions League last year, which nobody expected them to do, so they outperformed. Maybe he's putting all focus on the Premier League because he believes that they've got more of an opportunity to win that, knowing that Manchester City want to win the Champions League. I know Liverpool obviously really want to win the Premier League, but could that be, you know...
I mean, it could be. I mean, maybe you look at Leicester that they've got early kickoff and think that's a harder game.
Absolutely.
And he left Rose and Aurier at home, and you change those two fullbacks for Sanchez and Davis, and that changes the whole dynamic of your football team because they are not going to bomb on in the same way. I mean, Davis did well to intercept a ball for Moura's goal, but he struggled.
Everything that Olympiacos had came from down the right, and he really struggled.
And that was a guy called that was Daniel Podence who scored the goal. And
he's actually tiny.
He is tiny, isn't he?
Did Ben Davis struggle to the extent that he had to shut down his social media accounts because he was getting abuse like Andy Roberts?
No, did that happen?
Apparently so.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that just makes me sad.
You'll never walk alone, Andy, until you give away a questionable penalty and make a couple of mistakes.
Before we go to another game, just to say hello, Matty Valbuena.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. What a lovely little player he is.
He is a lovely person. I mean, are we guilty of just expecting Spurs to roll Olympiacos over?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And all the more surprising that if you look at... I think the pattern of last season for Spurs was such that we completely forgot that they had actually a difficult season in which they lost an awful, awful lot of games, and that they won a few games literally by the odd goal and by energy and thanks to Song Heung-min. And we forgot that they were already in a difficult place. And because they went to the Champions League final and the manner in which they went to this final made us lose from view the fact that had Arsenal not completely blown it in the last six or seven rounds of the league, they would have finished fifth.
Mm. Mm.
And, so, and they wouldn't be in this competition.
So it's almost like they're overachieving. But did you see Harry Kane's post-match remarks? Because he's normally so positive.
Mm.
And he said, the manager's been here for 6 years now and we're making the same mistakes we made when he first came here. And that's quite damning and quite worrying.
And Hugo Lloris did a big interview with us at France Football in which he was, I mean, you didn't have to read much between the lines to understand that there had to be something happening this season, otherwise that was it. And I mean, I might exaggerate a little bit, but there was an element of that, that this was a season in which they had to kick on and use what they'd done last season, the Champions League, as a springboard. Otherwise, an awful lot of players would probably look at themselves and think, well, we could earn more and win more if we were somewhere else, which is not a good situation to be in, especially when you think that the manager himself might also harbour thoughts of that kind.
They could earn more and win more. I mean, they would, wouldn't they? And that's the fear for Spurs fans. Chelsea 0, Valencia 1. Penalty gate, Barry. A handball in the 83rd minute. VAR checks. By the 87th minute, Jorginho had been the designated penalty taker until Barkley came on. Then it's Barkley's the designated penalty taker. He takes the ball. Jorginho just checks that he's okay with it. Aspilicueta comes in and says, are you sure? And he said Barkley should have it. Then Willian and Jorginho come up and check that Barkley's all right. And then Tammy Abraham tells him where to put the ball. Do you think that was helpful for Ross Barkley?
I'd imagine it was, yes. If they were making food rather than taking a penalty and were chefs rather than footballers,
making a
it would be an almost literal definition of too many cooks spoiling the broth. It was ridiculous. He may well have missed it anyway, but yeah, I imagine it didn't help all that sage advice he was getting from assorted teammates.
What is absolutely crazy, I mean, Frank Lampard later confirmed that he was the designated penalty taker if he was on the pitch. So, okay, but the crazy thing is to make him the designated penalty taker when you have two of the game's best penalty takers on the pitch already in Jorginho, whom I think has scored 13 and missed one, and Olivier Giroud, who scored 16 and missed one in their whole careers. You know, it's like insane. And that Ross Barkley hadn't taken a pen since February 2016.
No, he took one in the Super Cup, I think, didn't he?
You're right,
oh my goodness, I'm going to collapse here. He's taken in penalty shootouts. We're not talking about penalty shootouts. Taking penalties in official games, right, like a league game or a Champions League game or even an FA Cup game. No, he hasn't. He did it in pre-season, fair enough. But what's the I mean, it's a massive difference.
He's probably always gone into the Chelsea.
And also, it's Ross Barkley.
Taking pens.
It's Ross Barkley. The minute I saw it was Ross Barkley, I thought, no, that's like having Batty taking a pen.
But then,
you don't give a pen to Ross Barkley.
But equally, fine. If that's Frank Lampard's decision, fine.
Yes, that's fine.
But the players on the pitch should respect that decision, regardless of whether they think it's the right or wrong decision. They know
absolutely
that he is the designated penalty taker, so leave him alone to take the penalty.
Once again, doesn't matter. Still five games left. It really
but
doesn't
it was,
matter.
And the thing, it happened against the Valencia team, which is going through the most difficult of the pitch moment in the last year or so, or 2 years or so, because this is Valencia after all. But they've just lost a superb manager with whom they qualified for the Champions League, won the Copa del Rey, their first trophy for over a decade, was being sacked because he'd won the trophy. I don't know if you followed the story, it's absolutely astonishing. And the guy who replaces him basically says, well, this is a really tough time. I don't know how we're going to do this. And then they come and they beat Chelsea at Chelsea. Amazing.
And none of their players fronted up for pre-match media duties. They're kind of gone on strike, and their owner, Peter Lim, has said that any fines they incur for not attending to their, you know, UEFA designated media duties, they will have to pay themselves. I don't know if they did any media stuff after the game, but I presume they probably didn't. But you kind of feel sorry for the new manager. I fully expected Chelsea to give him a hiding, because it is very much Valencia in crisis.
Perhaps the Valencia players could just go and be Erling Braut Haaland every time they come out and just be incredibly petulant. Yeah, Chelsea had a few chances, didn't they?
Well, they're 22 versus Valencia's 8. I'm sorry, if you're not converting those, that's not good.
Mason Mount was injured in a challenge with Francis Coquelin. It was a yellow card. One of those got the ball, killed the man afterwards. Yeah. We all agreed that he knows what he's doing and it's a definite red card?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I heard Alan Brazil saying, oh, you know, if you get the ball, you do it, you're late.
Right.
It was a bad challenge, wasn't it?
Awful.
Right.
Do we have any news of Mason Mount, by the way?
I think he's okay.
Okay, there we are. Also in that group, Ajax beat Lille 3-0. And that'll do for part one. We'll begin part two with crisis club Manchester City at Shakhtar Donetsk. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We've got some live shows, everybody. Tomorrow, we're in Leeds. Faye, you looking forward to it?
I'm a little bit nervous, if I'm honest. I don't know what I've let myself in for.
It'll be fine. Just have a couple of cans, do some chatting. People seem happy afterwards. October the 30th, Barry, is at the Science Museum. Football Weekly versus Science.
Yeah, I'm slightly nervous about that one.
Yeah. It's me, you, Barney. That's good, because Barney's good, isn't he? Plus one more.
If anyone could beat science, it's Ronnie.
He'll out-whimsy the scientists. So we do a Football Weekly for part one, and then we come back with some scientists who will explain why we're all stupid. 20th of December, we're back in Leeds. Me, Lars, two others. Not you, Barry.
No.
No. What are you doing?
I'm going on strike.
Okay, good for you. But not for long, because on January the 27th, you're at the Liberty Hall in Dublin. Did you know that? Yes, you are.
I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
What a short strike, but it's definitely made people stand up and listen.
Well, I'm hoping that the second lead show will be an absolute disaster and you don't sell any tickets.
Okay.
Then we'll know what we've suspected for a long time, that I'm the main draw.
Okay.
So people of Leeds, do not go to see Football Weekly live in December.
I was going to say in December, not tomorrow, because that would be awful.
Yeah, well, if you've bought your ticket, I mean, you might as well turn up, I guess. That's the 27th of January. Barry back on the road at Liberty Hall. Right then, Man City won 3-0 at Shakhtar Donetsk. The news really was before the game, was John Stones getting injured in training, trying to kick the ball. It was funny, but, you know, you can pull a muscle, can't you, at any time? Out for 5 weeks. Fernandinho went in there. I mean, is this the game to judge whether Otamendi and Fernandinho is the answer to all of Manchester City's prayers? Shakhtar did have chances at 1-0 and at 2-0, where the defence seemed quite open. Before the pod, Faye, you were saying you think John Stones' injury is not necessarily a disaster for City.
No, I think it could actually be a boost for them in a way, because there was so much pressure on John Stones. His form's been pretty dreadful. Obviously, with Laporte out for so long, he was what everybody expected. You know, it would be him and Otamendi for the majority of the season. Pep Guardiola came out himself and said, you know, it's just not possible for, you know, that amount of players to play when you've got Champions League games and you're playing every 3 days. Can't do it. So from a squad point of view, it's not great. But from a Guardiola point of view, he's always said he's seen Fernandinho in that central role before, and he's been proved, you know, right. I think he was excellent, and I think that is going to give, you know, he's always had that cool, calm head. We talked a couple of seasons ago about his importance, and when he was out for that length of time, City really struggled without him, and I think he's exactly the person that they need in the centre of defence when they're without Laporte, and of course, no more company. And, you know, I have said before, don't know why you wouldn't kind of consider some kind of emergency loan for company, you know, at the moment, with what's going on with him at Anderlecht.
Isn't he injured? He missed his testimonial because he was injured.
How could they get an emergency loan?
Well, no, I don't know what the protocol would be, whether that would be it.
Well, I presume they have an academy that's got no shortage of
centre backs. He said he's got an 18-year-old, but he's clearly not ready, otherwise he'd have tried him.
Yeah, there are a couple of guys in the academy.
Maybe he might be ready.
John Stones is interesting. When we talk about Dele Alli and the sort of decline of a footballer, you don't want to put too much on it, but there's a confidence. I mean, confidence is a huge part of football. And John Stones doesn't seem to
be overconfident, yes, that's true.
to be overconfident. But
no, he doesn't. And I think I always come back to the game, to that game, I think it was a Nations League against the Dutch, where he made one big mistake. Everybody can make a mistake. But it's the way in which this mistake made his game disintegrate afterwards, whereas De Ligt, who is having his own problems, but for very different reasons at the moment, made also a big mistake and reacted by scoring a goal and by being actually one of the best players on the pitch after that. And I thought, gosh, he's very fragile, obviously, and there is a fragility. He's a superb player, and he's been encouraged to play in a way which is very dangerous and very risky by his manager.
Yeah.
Is he quite ready for that? And the thing is that when you draw the comparison with as great a player as Fernandinho, and I really put him in the great category, who arrives there at the age of, 33, makes it look as if that's the job he has been doing all of his life, and not against a bad team and against bad attackers. And they come back with, I think, their best performance of the season, perhaps overall, and a 3-0 win. Wow. He's going to have his work cut out, I think, to get back in the side.
There must be somebody who's going to be working with him on that, surely, because they've talked before about not having enough, you know, this seems so stupid saying this out loud, not enough strength in depth at City, but in terms of defence at the moment, they didn't really, you know, replace what they lost, and then they lose Aymeric Laporte really early in the season, you know, so that's a mistake, I would say, that is not something you would attribute to Pep Guardiola usually as making it.
Someone was saying, you know, because he did convert Mascherano, didn't he, that actually his and I'll definitely be corrected below the line, his record of signing centre-backs is not tremendous. And maybe he's like me on Championship Manager 93,
for example.
I only want to sign centre-forwards, really. there has been a criticism, and someone will correct me, that Pep hasn't... His record of signing centre-backs is not brilliant, right? And he converted Mascherano. But a lot of people have said, why didn't they just spend the extra 5 or 10 million for Maguire? Because Maguire would have gone to City. Or Alderweireld was there for 25 million. So it's very strange that he didn't...
Just as they didn't go for Virgil van Dijk or at the very end. They were in it and then they pulled out and let it go to Liverpool, and we've seen the result.
Jamie Jackson, writing in the paper, picked out Gundogan as the best player. His curling shot off the post set up the first. His finish for the second was delightful, wasn't it? So basically sent the whole stadium the wrong way. I was definitely expecting him to put it in the bottom corner. He should have had another, maybe. But he's one of those players that I... almost take no notice of. So, you know, if I'm walking around my day, he never pops into my head. Should I spend more time liking Gundogan? Should I spend more time rating him?
You should pronounce his name right. It's Gundogan. Well, you know, start. Maybe
Gundogan,
that's why you don't
Gundogan,
like him.
Either way. But you know, but should I care about him more?
I completely understand what you mean, because I'm the same. He's just never been... I mean, this is the problem with playing in a team like City. He just doesn't stand out because there's so many other standout players. But he was absolutely fantastic against Shakhtar, I thought.
We were talking to some friends recently about those players exactly who are like this, whom you don't think enough of, and who are basically useful players. What I mean by that, when they're not in the team really misses something. Even when they're not playing that well. They seem to be, make it gel. I mean, Juan Mata is another one of those. Sometimes, you know, and I'm sure you could think of others too. And he's one of those. But I don't think he's really underestimated. I mean, he has had a very fine career. Maybe he's a bit too much of a kind of prototype of a Guardiola player. It's a collective. Not somebody who necessarily does very spectacular things, but was, again, very, very efficient. I was really impressed with City, the way they went about their business and the slickness of their moves. And okay, I actually thought about that after they were beaten in Norwich. I said, ooh la la, Shakhtar, you're in trouble, because they're going to react, and they reacted superbly.
Right, PSG 3, Real Madrid 0. No Neymar, no Mbappe, no Cavani,
yep.
Di Maria.
And best performance of PSG for quite a long time.
Di Maria with 2, the second absolute
superb
cracker. Thomas Meunier in the last minute, wonderful goal as well.
Again, one of these players, when he's in the side, they're always better. And he had been taken out because of to be replaced by Tilo Kehrer, which is absolutely crazy. But he's back in the side, and he was wonderful.
So finally, it's going to be PSG's year.
I don't think so, because there are 2 PSGs. Actually, there are 3, probably 12 PSGs. And there's the PSG of the month of September and the PSG in March and April, which are 2 different beasts altogether. But their performance was excellent. The rhythm was terrific. The difference, the arrival of a proper midfielder called Ganagay has made to this team is astonishing. They do have now a midfield. He was absolutely everywhere. Players, I mean, Everton fans, basically that's the Gay that you remember from not the last season he had at the club, the one before that, when he was honestly very close to N'Golo Kante as being the best in this position in the country. And he's made a huge difference to that. And the comments, of course, in France are all about no Neymar, no Cavani, no Mbappé, we play better football. Wow. And we actually completely thrash Real Madrid, which, of course, is a team which is not a team. Which was completely shapeless. Honestly, I'm like, you, Barry, I think Zizou, what, you give him, what, 2 months, 3 months?
Less than that,
yeah.
Just before we get onto the crisis at Real Madrid, a lovely question from R. Jenkins, who says, has Thomas Meunier finally stopped looking for Hal Robson-Kanu following that turn in the Euros? Nick says, probably one for Philippe, how will Tuchel use Di Maria when PSG are at full strength? Is it possible he'd feature in a front three alongside Mbappe and Neymar? Mbappe through the middle?
Yeah, he can do that.
Does Tuchel have to play Cavani, Neymar and Mbappe? Is that sort of...
Does he have to? I'm not entirely convinced. But if you do that, it's true that it becomes a bit difficult because you're playing a 4-3-3 and you're thinking, okay, Verratti, you want him. Gay, you want him. Are you going to put Di Maria as the third midfielder? Perhaps not, even though he's absolutely crucial. And he's been... I mean, he had a superb game. It's not the first superb game he's had for PSG, but he would be more at ease in a 4-2-3-1, for example. I mean, in the Champions League, we're going to see him still a bit because Neymar is still suspended, obviously, because of, do you remember the comments he made and suspension and so forth? Mbappé and Cavani are going to come back at some point. But to be honest, I think Tuchel is the kind of man who would be not be averse of taking some strong decisions. And perhaps I think we'll see a PSG which rotates quite a bit. Which might be no bad thing, and in which Di Maria, I mean, how do you keep him out of the team now?
The main talking point of this game, I think, was the fact my brain is conditioned to watching Real Madrid play in white and PSG
oh, my
in
goodness,
navy.
Yeah.
And it really bamboozled me watching them play in each other's colours. PSG specifically paying tribute to the Allies team from Escape to Victory with their white shirt and the red and blue sort of, what would you call, stripe down the left side. But it was very confusing.
PSG have registered their away kit as their first choice kit for the Champions League this season. So they wore white and Real Madrid wore PSG. Basically, yeah. It's like they turned up without a kit and said, oh, well, you have that.
Why
kit.
Have they done that? Is that a commercial reason?
Oh, yeah.
100%, yeah.
Mark says, I didn't have my glasses on for the first goal. I thought Madrid had scored. Fair enough.
They had done the same thing last year, by the way. I don't think I'm wrong in saying that. When they played Liverpool, they were also playing in that kit. In an away kit. The single reason for that being that Christmas was coming and they wanted to promote the jersey in the mega stores and online.
Wow.
Jonathan Wilson said it was sort of tantamount to the time when Walkers changed salt and vinegar and cheese and onion, swapped them around.
Oh, blue and green.
Yeah.
Mm. I would say that's a bigger problem for me, the crisp one. But this is ridiculous. Real Madrid, first time in Champions League history, they didn't have a shot on target. Obviously, they did have one,
two...
shot on target. Gareth Bale scored, but it was disallowed.
But they had two goals disallowed, didn't they?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they had two shots on target. Both went in, but both were disallowed.
Mm-hmm. That's something like 16 years since Opta started, since they've not registered because those two don't count.
I mean, you think this crisis is of that magnitude?
Well, at Real Madrid, it is always of that magnitude, isn't it? Even if it comes down after a couple of weeks. In this particular case, it's all that you hear around the club. I had a long chat with Sid not that long ago in Manchester, and I'm sure you're going to talk, or you have talked to him about this as well. It looks as if there are an awful lot of people in Madrid who will be quite happy to see the back of Zizou. Because of, well, what happened in the preseason, the whole Bale debacle, which was honestly not very good for anybody. The fact that the team doesn't look, I don't know, I don't know how to make sense of it anymore.
But they didn't look like they had any sort of coherent plan.
No, there was like what on earth? Well, yeah, how are you supposed to play? I don't quite get it. And okay, you've got Bale, Benzema, and Hazard, who still looks very short of fitness and a little bit round the edges, shall we say? But you had absolutely no inkling as to how they were supposed to, I don't know, collaborate, play together. The midfield wasn't there. I mean, it was poor Casemiro. He was, as to use an old phrase, he was the fireman who kept going to the wrong fire. And so that left... you don't know that phrase? Which was used when... Actually, it's a bit before our time. When Hungary beat England at Wembley. That was the famous phrase. I tend to avoid
bringing up Hungary on the pod just in case Jonathan Wilson's here and I don't have a spare 3 hours.
Okay. But they were... No, I mean, there are problems within the club. And it shows, again, going back to a place where you succeeded so well is not necessarily a good idea, especially when you left it at precisely the right moment.
Well, they're... Next game is on Sunday against Sevilla, who started the season really well and are managed by Julen Lopetegui, who was in charge of Real this time last year and who they controversially poached from Spain, and then he got sacked 2 days before the World Cup. If they lose that game, when there seems to be a very good chance they will, then I think, you know, there could be all sorts of shenanigans at the Bernabeu.
And with a little Portuguese manager just going in the background.
I was
going
to say, he's going to be...
I'm absolutely positive about that.
So Pochettino, no.
Jose Mourinho.
Mourinho, yes.
Why would they do that to themselves?
Because Florentino loves Jose.
Okay.
Ronan says, what's the best way to fit a fraud pun into Zidane's name? Is he fraud, Fraudan, Fraudine, Fraudan? They all seem forced, I think. They probably are all forced.
And he's not really a fraud.
Okay.
You can't say that.
He was a half-decent player, if we're going to be honest. An email from David says, greetings from rural Illinois. Greetings from rural Illinois. I thought Gareth Bale's disallowed goal in the game on Wednesday was absolutely delightful. It got me to thinking about the best ever disallowed goals. The top one that came to mind was Thiago Silva's in 2013 against Nice. Then I realised that was the same physical goal that Bale didn't score his goal into. Is that goal a magnet for disallowed goals? Can you think of any other memorable disallowed
goals? Lilian Lasland, in European Cup for Auxerre, a spectacular bicycle kick in the top corner, disallowed for dangerous play when there wasn't a player within 2 yards of him. That really stuck in my craw and still hasn't left.
West Ham v Cambridge United in, I'm going to say, 1992 or 1993, last game of the season. We needed a win to stay up. They needed a win to go up. And Chris Leadbitter put us 1-0 up. Great strike from the corner of the box into the bottom right-hand corner. The linesman gave Kevin Bartlett offside. And Kevin Bartlett was fast, but the only thing he ever did for Cambridge United was be fast enough to be in an offside position when that ball went in, which meant we didn't take the lead. I think David Speedy and Clive Allen or something scored for them. We went down, and the rest was history. Spanish TV channel El Chiringuito have gone big with the claim that there's a deal in place to take Mbappe from PSG to Real and €40 million of the potential €275 million fee has been paid as a deposit. Imagine €40 million just being the deposit.
What is true is that the cash that Real Madrid have got in the bank at the moment, plus the financial guarantees they've got from other sources, mean that they could afford a transfer of that magnitude. Wow. That's absolutely true.
Wow. And wouldn't that do PSG a favour, though, if we're saying, you know, they play better without Mbappe and Cavani?
Well,
and
listen,
Neymar?
I mean, there's already the Neymar situation, which is crazy. Mm. Cavani is coming to the end of his magnificent career at some point. Mbappe, there's been loads of noise that he wanted out. Can you afford to lose three players like this within the space of a season and a half? I don't think so. I think it would look pretty silly.
Mm. If you were given $275 million, you could hopefully sign someone else.
Mm. I mean, they've got, you know, the proof of it was last night's game. They've still got a very decent squad, haven't they?
Also in that group, Club Bruges 0, Galatasaray 0. Do you want to go big on that, Baz? Atletico 2, Juve 2. Best game of the night, by all accounts, some lovely goals in it. Cuadrado's sort of Iron Robin type finish on the counter, followed by a little bit too much dancing for me. Matuidi put them two up with a lovely header, great cross from Alexandro, and then two very League Two goals from Atletico. A classic League Two set piece for Savic and a Herrera header from a Trippier corner. Ronaldo almost snatched it in the last minute with a great run, just went wide. Sid picked out Kieran Trippier for praise. He's got a lot of praise, actually, since he's gone there. Maybe we're just interested because we know more about him, but he seems to be doing it. Considering the season he had last year, just shows, and you were talking about Tottenham players potentially going, that you know you can be at one place for long enough and sometimes you need to move on.
I couldn't understand the reason for letting him go, and the more it goes, the less I can understand it, because neither Serge Aurier or Kyle Walker-Peters are anywhere near Kieran Trippier. But what can I say? And he started every game, I think, every big game for Atletico this season.
Also in that group, Bayer Leverkusen 1, Lokomotiv 2, which is a pretty big upset there.
That's a big upset, yeah.
Now we're talking about Real Madrid's problems. Are we in a position where Real Madrid are sort of the worst Real and Barca combo for a long time, or is that going too far?
I think it's going too far because in terms of Real, first of all, I think it's only a matter of time before they find their balance again, so it's not a terminal crisis. In the case of Barcelona, I think there are elements for cautious optimism at the moment, with you know young players coming through from the Masia, first time for a long time.
But the bar is clearly high.
Very high
for the worst ever. But anyway,
worst ever. No, I mean there were worse Barca teams than that. Not that long ago. I mean, when I say not that long ago, it's probably before Rijkaard arrived and turned them into European champions.
It's quite a long time ago.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And as a combo, as a combo, we've got both those sides.
You're desperate for this to be true, aren't you?
Not necessarily. I think, maybe. From my sort of very Premier League centric view of football, I put Barcelona and Real Madrid sort of above everyone else,
but you put
without necessarily doing the due diligence to put them there.
But we're coming to, I think it's because we're coming to the end of the Messi Ronaldo era. We're coming to the end, and it's been football has been completely dominated by these two players and those two clubs for the, you know, for what, 10 years or whatever. Yes, 10 years actually. And so it's quite normal that you readapt, you try to adapt. Real Madrid had a very difficult season without Cristiano Ronaldo. Messi at the moment is not playing, and so on. It's normal that they should spend some time, you know, finding a new balance. But given their financial resources, this is not going to last for very long. Believe me, they'll be back very soon.
So Barca drew 0-0 at Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund had by far the best chances of the game.
That was a cracking game.
They were given a penalty in the second half. Jadon Sancho was fouled by Nelson Semedo. Good save from Ter Stegen, from Marco Reus. He was miles off his line, but we don't need to...
And there were, I think, three players encroaching as well, and the pen was taken.
Okay. I mean, who knows? The VAR people were just having a cup of tea at that time. Ansu Fati became the youngest player to play for Barcelona in the Champions League, beating Bojan by about 2 months. Overall, he's the third youngest player to start a Champions League game, the 10th youngest to play in one. The youngest ever, Celestin Babayaro, formerly of Chelsea, made his Champions League debut for Anderlecht against Steaua Bucharest at the age of 16 and 86 days. He was sent off just before half-time. Sam says, with Fati and Messi forming a strong attack for the alternative seven dwarfs, which other footballers could make it in? Speedy? Then he says costly, but I can't think of who that is. Something for you guys to think about. In that group as well, Inter won, Slavia Prague won. Inter needed a 92nd minute equaliser from Nicolò Barella to avoid defeat against the rank outsiders in Group F. Romelu Lukaku had a free header in the 97th minute but went straight at the keeper. And the other group, Benfica won, RB Leipzig 2. Good week for Red Bull in the Champions League.
With the dark horses. Yeah.
Also in that group, Lyon 1, Zenit 2. I lose track of when Lyon have got a good squad and when they've sold all of their good squad.
It's about both all of the time.
Where in the rotation are they?
They're not in the best place at the moment. They started the season absolutely fantastically well in Ligue 1. Scored 10 goals in the first two games. And everybody thought, there's a new order in place. It's now Silvinho, the former Arsenal player, who is in charge of the team, with Juninho Pernambucano, who is a sports director. So we think there's a new regime in place. We're going to see perhaps a Lyon team that doesn't show the same inconsistency as it did under Genesio. And in fact, we're seeing exactly the same thing. But, you know, they're still producing players at a remarkable rate, young players at a remarkable rate. It's not a bad squad by any means, but they were not, honestly, they were very, very disappointing against Zenit.
Right, Europa League games. You can listen to the pod while watching them. Celtic go to Rennes. That's a 5:55 kickoff. Why is it 5:55 and not 6? Is that just so there's no crossover with the early game and the late game? Arsenal go to Eintracht Frankfurt at that time too. Then your 8 o'clock, Wolves against Sporting Braga, Manchester United v Astana, Rangers versus Feyenoord. And we should say rest in peace, Fernando Rixon, who died after being diagnosed with motor neurone disease. He died at the age of just 43. Revealed in 2013 he'd been diagnosed with the disease, was given 18 months to live. He battled on for 6 years, if that's the right word, raising hundreds of thousands of pounds to go towards research into the disease. Played for Rangers for 6 years, being inducted into the Rangers Hall of Fame in 2014. Also played for AZ Alkmaar and Fortuna Sittard in his home country, the Netherlands. Got 12 caps in the process. It's obviously such a tragic story and a terrible disease. And should point you in the direction of an interview he did with Stuart James a few months ago, which is even more poignant and moving now, but gave a real impression of someone who managed to keep living with such a terrible disease.
Well, it's a horrible, horrible disease because your mind is completely fine, but you're just locked in this body that doesn't work. And, you know, Fernando is a good player, hellraiser at the time, you know, fond of the finer things in life, shall we say. And he was lived out his final days in this hospice on the outskirts of Glasgow. His Russian wife, who he met when he was at Zenit, Veronica, and his six-year-old daughter, Isabella, they were based in Valencia, and they used to come and visit him. And it must have been really hard for them, really hard for him. They didn't have any money to speak of, really, because he squandered all his earnings, openly admitted that he, you know, just spent loads of cash on having a good time when he was a player. So they were living on a pretty paltry pension, and a lot of Rangers fans raised money for him to help keep him going. But in a way, he seems to have been a good guy, and I think it's maybe a bit of a release as well. You know, it's sad that he's died, but he had very little quality of life.
Yeah, by the end. And I think it was he was too ill to travel back to Valencia, wasn't it? Which meant that he ended up in the hospice near Glasgow. Look, all our thoughts.
Interestingly, actually, I saw it was announced on social media yesterday, and I just went to look at the replies, fearing the worst. And no, there was sympathy from both sets of Old Firm fans, which was heartwarming to see.
There was an absolutely lovely and very heartfelt tweet from an account of Celtic fans calling the accounts. I mean, maybe you got it.
Yeah, Seltzer here. It says, RIP Fernando Rixon, we enjoyed booing you in a jersey top. We think you loved every second of it. Nothing but respect for you and how you dealt with your illness. God bless. And that'll do for part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Seems a long time ago now, but Aston Villa and West Ham drew 0-0 on Monday night. Masuaku sent off after 67 minutes. Pretty harsh second yellow card. Lots of people saying Mike Dean making it about himself. To be fair, the game needed someone to make it about them.
Yeah.
Was it the 100th then?
No, that 100th. Was that the 100th? No, the 100th has been and gone, surely.
I don't know. I'm not too sure.
Oh, that's a very good question.
I thought that had happened.
I'm not so sure. I've been quite a few games he was officiating at thinking I might be there at the historic moment, and I always failed.
It surely would not have gone without fanfare. He himself might have highlighted it.
The fact is we absolutely should have remembered it. Here we are, Mike. This is it was April 2019.
Oh, my goodness.
Mike Dean reaches 100... Premier League red cards after sending off Ashley Young on a Tuesday night game
at Molineux.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Dean didn't shove anyone.
That would have been more interesting.
It would have been. He got a second yellow card midway through the second half for a foul on Diego Jota.
So it wasn't even a straight red.
No, unbelievable. Big chance for Jack Grealish at the end. Just stretching for a ball. Villa were pretty poor after West Ham went down to 10 men. You know, it is sometimes harder to play against 10 men. After the red card, West Ham had more shots than Aston Villa. Anyway, it was boring for everyone involved. In the Football League, 7 draws in League One. So just 4 teams won games. Coventry are atop, beat AFC Wimbledon 2-1. Ipswich move into second with a 1-0 win at MK Dons. Blackpool up to fifth with a 1-0 win at Donny, and Shrewsbury beat Southend 4-3. Bolton shared a goalless draw with Oxford, probably a relief after conceding 23-6. In League Two, Exeter stay top, and unbeaten with a 2-0 win over Port Vale. Crewe move into second with a 2-1 win at Leighton Orient, who are without a win in 5 now. 3 wins in a row for Cheltenham, who move up to third. They beat Bradford 3-2, all goals coming in the second half. Stephen is still rock bottom of the Football League, the only team in League Two without a win. Harry Smith with the only goal of the game for Northampton, then got himself sent off 12 minutes later for a second yellow. And Mansfield 0, Cambridge United 4. Brilliant. It's the second game in a row where the team Cambridge have been playing have had a man sent off for a wild two-footed lunge, and we've won. So long may it continue. Right, Premier League preview time. On Friday, Southampton, Bournemouth. The Leicester Spurs early kickoff is potentially the most interesting game on Saturday. Burnley, Norwich, Everton play Sheffield United. Sheffield United have a change of owner, everybody. Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, co-owned the club with local businessman Kevin McCabe, has won a court battle in which Mr. Justice Fancourt ruled McCabe would have to sell his 50% stake to Prince Abdullah for £5 million. McCabe, who is a lifelong Blades fan, said, "I question whether Prince Abdullah has the suitability to be the right guy to lead as the owner of Sheffield United. Prince Abdullah told Sky, in every decision we face, we will make sure we do the best for the club. I'm going to invest heavily in the academy. We will have a great working relationship with Chris Wilder. I know I'll do well, and I ask fans to give me an opportunity and we'll make them proud." Any thoughts?
I mean, it's a strange case because Mr. McCabe actually has put a lot of his own personal money into the club over a long period of time. And it seems that was at one moment, he tried to put in place a contractual relationship with Prince Abdullah, which would enable him, Mr. McCabe, to get control of the club. But there was a clause in this particular agreement which enabled the other party, i.e. Prince Abdullah, to get the club, the club share that Mr. McCabe had, for only £5 million. So it's a legal problem. It's not totally out of question that this judgment will be challenged and will be appealed against. So we'll have to see. It might be a developing story.
Manchester City play Watford, the late kickoff on Saturday, Newcastle versus Brighton, both teams in the bottom 5. Sunday, Palace Wolves at 2, West Ham, Man United at 2. Lindelof and De Gea have signed long deals with Manchester United. This seems like, is this a good thing? Is this a good sign that everyone's behind Solskjaer? Or do we think, out of Lindelof, De Gea and Solskjaer, Solskjaer will be there for the least amount of time?
It felt like weird timing. Kind of thought, oh, okay, why now?
I mean, De Gea is clearly crucial, right? So
yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's been going on for so long. Why now?
What's happened to De Gea that's made him go, I want to get this done before we play Astana on Thursday night?
Perhaps the thought of extremely high wages, which I believe is the case.
Oh, you're such a cynic, Philippe, aren't you?
£75,000 a week, which is rather a lot of money.
Say how much it is again?
And maybe he's just happy in Manchester.
How much is it again?
I think it's £375,000 a week.
Sunday, Arsenal, Villa, and Chelsea, Liverpool, probably the most interesting game of the weekend. I think on Monday, Barry, you said you think Liverpool might drop some points here.
Yes.
All right. Do you care to elaborate or not?
Yes, I think Liverpool might drop some points here.
Thank you for being so amenable. Thank you for your, what's Haaland's name? What's his name? It's exactly like a post-match with Alfinger Haaland's son.
Well, I always have this problem previewing games. I don't know what's going to happen. I think Liverpool might not win.
Okay, that's all I wanted. Thank you so much. A nice league record here.
If you hadn't whizzed past Man City Watford.
Okay, yeah.
I've got an interesting tidbit about that one.
Ooh.
Can you guess what was number one in the UK charts the last time Watford beat Manchester City in any competition?
Elton John and Kiki D.
Nope.
Okay.
It was Simple Minds.
Alive and Kicking.
Belfast Child.
Oh, thanks so much.
It was a long, long, long time ago. Margaret Thatcher was still Prime Minister.
Was she now?
Great.
Thatcher, better or worse than Boris, or is that a different podcast?
Maybe a different one.
Right. The
Ben Thatcher, of yours, obviously.
Ben Thatcher, yeah. He could go over to Europe and show them, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He could Pedro Mendes, the EU, get it sorted. To the Romanian top division, Sepsi.
Did you say Romanian?
Yes. To the Romanian top division, Sepsi's record, they're eighth. Played 9, 1-1, drawn 7, lost 1, 4-6 against 6. It's quite a nice bit of symmetry there, isn't it? Monty says, with the Rugby World Cup starting, name the best starting 15 in a rugby match made entirely professional footballers, past and present. He asks, you know, I don't have time to do all of that. He's got Quinn, Pearson, Mulby as a front row. I think that's a very 80s front row, isn't it? I think props are slightly quicker.
Wait, who's the Pearce?
Is he saying Stuart Pearce as hooker? I'd get Ryan Fraser in. You know what, a little a little squat, muscly lad. Akinfenwa?
Grant Holt has to be hooker.
You think Grant Holt is hooker? Definitely. Why so?
He looks like a hooker.
Does he?
Well, I mean, all rugby players look like the same. Yeah. Look the same now.
That's true.
Unless they're South African. Mm. But
Peter Crouch as lock.
Yeah, he's got locks of Crouch and Flo. He'd win a lot of ball in the line out, I guess.
I can imagine Crouchy with that sort of second row headband on, sort of plodding over for a line out.
In my school memories, one second row is Crouch and one is... You can't have two really gangly ones, can you? You miss out. Scrum half, he's gone Dennis Wise, which is quite a good shout, actually. Fly half...
Or Jody Morris.
Jody Morris could do it. Fly half, Hoddle. Take Hoddle at fly half, wouldn't you? He's got centres, Lampard and Gerrard. I mean, obviously, that's not going to work, is it? Wingers, Henri and Carl Walker. Someone else replied with Traore. Adama Traore would be a good wing, wouldn't he? Arguably might be better as a rugby wing than a football winger.
I would have Dennis Bergkamp as fly half. You want a number 10.
Also, he can get a bit dirty as well, can't he?
That's right.
Bergkamp.
And he could use both feet, which is a...
That's true.
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, but he wouldn't fly to the World Cup in Japan, so he wouldn't be much use.
He would take the Trans-Siberian.
Oh, yes, he would, and he could have done a documentary.
Absolutely.
But then he'd be out for the first couple of games because he'd be too tired.
That's true.
And at fullback, yeah?
At fullback, I mean, you probably want a keeper, don't you? Because you've got to catch it. Edison, he's got Gary Neville here, but...
Oh, never.
No, don't
really. No, never.
Ben says, on a recent bulletin for a charity match at Cambridge United, Max was listed as a, quote, club legend. Can he explain how he managed this honour without a single appearance? I would suggest, Ben, that there aren't that many, you know, if you've got to fill the list, there aren't that many who've, you know, done that much. But I'm embarrassed.
Who's the ambient techno...
Yes, so there's. If you want Z-list Cambridge United fans, you've got me, Mark Saggers, and one half of Groove Armada.
Groove Armada, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Tom Findlay, quite a good footballer he is. Okay. Got a good left foot, yeah, good engine. Daniel says, I had a dream the other night. I was on holiday when I spotted Barry relaxing on a sun lounger. What a lovely dream. I went over and asked him for a cigarette, to which he replied, fuck off and leave me alone.
Sounds about right.
I can't help but think that's what real life Baz would say. If Daniel sees you on holiday and asks for a cigarette, you would happily give him a cigarette, wouldn't you?
It depends. I have a problem with people bumming cigarettes.
What is the problem?
Well, the problem is cigarettes are very expensive.
Yeah.
And while I don't want to see anyone who, is addicted to smoking go without... A lot of people just never buy their own. So I judge each case on its merits. So say if I'm standing outside a pub smoking and a procession of... And it will regularly happen, depending on where you are, five or six people in a row come up, ponce a fag off you. I judge each case on its merits and dole them out accordingly. So it would depend. I'll be honest, the chances of me being caught on a sun lounger on holidays are very slim because I'm not a sun lounger guy. I get so bored.
Mm. It's interesting. You would buy Daniel a pint, though, wouldn't you?
I would. I also judge cases like that on its merits.
Oh, okay.
On their merits, you know. People who would approach me because they recognise me from this tend to be the kind of people I wouldn't want to have pints with.
So we'll be in Leeds tomorrow night, and if you are coming, yes, absolutely spend as much time with Barry after the show. I've got a 5 a.m. train the next day, so I can't really spend a lot of time socialising.
I'm at Wigan the next day.
So that, but you, no, but no, you can't, Faye. It's not an early. You're not up early.
It's not super. No, but I've got work to do.
Well, you don't really, do you? Whereas Barry, okay, so you got work to do. So have I. Jonathan will just talk to you about Hungarian football from the 40s. So everyone who comes,
well, he has to go somewhere as well.
Yeah, important. That's true. He's got Leicester Spurs the next day.
I'll hang around because my cousin's coming. Okay. So.
But the only person who has nothing to do on Saturday who would like to spend time buying you pints and giving you cigarettes is Barry Glendinning. And we'll see you in Leeds. Thanks so much for coming, Philippe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Faye.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.